Excuse me. Could you tell me how to get to the medical school? I'm supposed to be doing a lecture in about 20 minutes and my driver's a bit lost.
Okay, children, let's take our seats. We have a lot to learn today.
Tim, how do you remember all these dates?
It's part of my car service. I need help. I'm thinking of checking into the Henry Ford Clinic.
There's an interesting perfume.
It's Vicks. I have a cold.
And I've got symptoms. I don't care what that doctor says.
Now, what do you think Mrs. Crane would like for dinner?
Oh, you have free reign. Just bear in mind she can't have shellfish, poultry, red meat, saturated fats, nitrates, wheat, starch, sulfites, MSG, or dairy. Did I say nuts?
Oh, I think that's implied.
Dr. Barry Dworkin is here. Stop dancing. Sit down now. 521 Talk, star 580, 1-800-580-CFRA. Great to see you.
Good to see you too.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Boy, oh boy, the ophthalmologists sure are laying down the law, aren't they? I spoke about this. I can't remember if it was last week or the week before. I outlined some of the fear in some of the specialties given the cut in fees.
Mm-hmm.
I talked about ophthalmology. I talked about ECGs. Since then, I've received email from people who have heard from ear, nose, and throat specialists and a number of other specialties, and their doctors are worried. They're not only worried about their ability to make an income and provide for themselves, but they're also worried about some of the impacts this is going to have on patient care.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I want to direct people again to the opinion piece that appeared in the Toronto Star by a Dr. Arshinoff, who's one of the leading ophthalmologists in Ontario. He's written almost 300 peer-reviewed articles. He is in charge of a mobile clinic that goes to Northern Ontario and performs cataract surgery. And he says, look, one of the things that I do is I do double cataracts. I do both eyes at once.
Mm-hmm.
If that's possible, because it saves the healthcare system a lot of money. Otherwise, right. I have people who are coming to Toronto.
Yeah, twice.
They do one eye. I send them back, and then they come back later, and I've got to do the other eye. The one of the problems is, I'm not going to say anesthetist again, because I can't say it, but the anesthesiologist only gets paid for one eye, okay?
Yeah.
And now they've cut that in half, and now the anesthesiologists are saying, we're not even going to...
We're not going to do it. It doesn't cover the cost of having an anesthesiologist
so
in the center.
We're not going to do it anymore.
Right.
Which he says is fine if it's a mild case or the person has all their faculties, is a generally healthy person. But if you have somebody
who's anxious or
struggles into this kind of thing, you're talking about serious complications here. And this is putting people at risk. And now you have ophthalmologists who are saying the policy as proposed by the McGuinty government on fees puts anyone who needs to have cataract surgery at risk.
Yeah, and again, it's the ophthalmologists are not comfortable doing the surgery because the patient is not adequately sedated, so they don't want to harm the patient. And so as a result, anesthesiologists, there's one hospital, St. Joseph's Health Center in Toronto, from the article that reading from, has already informed them as of July 1st that anesthesiologists will no longer be available for cataract surgery because the fees do not cover the cost of having that anesthesiologist there. And so the ophthalmologist can't do their surgery because you don't have the support network involved to provide that comprehensive care to the patient. And this is, as I've written and posted, this is the law of unintended consequences. You're dealing with a healthcare system that is a web of interconnections, multiple connections to other connections to other connections. And when you think that you can cut in one area and expect a linear or straightforward result in a system that isn't linear or straightforward, you end up with all kinds of collateral damage that occurs. And that's, you will see that not only with ophthalmology, but in all the specialties, because everything crosses over.
Yeah. The attack line, I call it the attack line, the line of propaganda, because that's what it is from the McGuinty government, is we're not going to pay the same for a procedure that only takes half the time or an eighth of the time than it used to. But of course, they never tell you that, well, the reason that it's only taking half the time, if indeed that figure is even true, is because the specialist, the specialists themselves have actually made the advancements by way of millions of dollars of investments in their own equipment.
They've upgraded their skills. It also requires staff to be able to provide that service. And it is no different when you think of technology and how it changes outcomes. Think of, first of all, if we deal with the cataract surgery, when you're doing cataract surgery, you now have patients where it takes 15 or 20 minutes to do the surgery instead of hours. Easier for the patient, less risky for the patient, less sedation required, quicker service, better lenses that are being used, vision is restored more quickly, the social and economic impact on that patient is lessened, not only for the patient, but also for society in general, that does not have to provide support services for the year that it took to wait for surgery, because people can't see when they have cataracts. They can't drive when they have cataracts. Other people have to help tend to them, to deal with something, to drive them to the store, to help them with shopping. There's a lot of things that happen. All that disappears because of the ability to provide that service more quickly. The other aspect to think about is that, again, you are cutting down that wait time. It is, all these things have value. Instead of thinking of they're charging X dollars for this surgery, it's X dollars for that surgery that gives you all these other benefits. And it's really no different, for example, and I don't hear anybody complaining, when other industries or other services automate or improve their technology. So if you take your car in, for example, and now, whereas they used to have mechanics look over the car to see if there was what the problems were to make a diagnosis mm-hmm. and fix it, which right. would take hours, now they plug it into a computer that right. that monitors all the stuff that's going on in the car.
And diagnoses the problem in seconds.
And they don't charge less for the service. In fact, they tend to charge more because they've paid for the training and for
the
technology
that they've made. Yeah,
so
sure.
It's very similar in that vein. The technology improves the service, but it also has side benefits that people have to consider yeah. in the total cost
of the
service.
Let's talk about Dr. Shady Ashmala.
Yes.
Opinion piece, National Post today, the editorial section, page A10. I can't read the whole thing, but this is what I find troubling.
And you may want to let our listeners know how specialized this physician is.
Yeah, this is a minimally invasive surgical oncologist.
Right, so cancer surgeon.
A cancer surgeon.
Yeah.
So probably...
highly specialized, many years.
Yeah, 15 years probably, something
and,
like
and
that.
And always upgrading skills because the techniques that are used are continually improved.
Listen to this. Ms. Matthews, the health minister, has cut fees for all after-hours emergency surgery by 10%. That includes any emergency that pulls a surgeon out of bed at 3 a.m. to operate on a patient who has been shot or whose appendix has ruptured. Yes, conducting life-saving procedures in the middle of the night is far less efficient and more time-consuming than conducting such procedures during the day, but tragedy does not keep bankers hours.
Mm-hmm.
Having a surgeon available to come into the hospital and operate at all hours is critical for the population's health. Being on call overnight isn't an easy lifestyle, and it was already difficult to entice enough surgeons to sign up for such emergency service. Now that incentive has been cut. These are two examples. He has an earlier example.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think what it dealt with here. I'll have to get into that a little
sure.
later. Of cuts that would not have been made if the expertise of experienced doctors had been relied upon. The changes will negatively impact patients, will send a message to the province and its doctors that the decisions the decisions made are not about health management, they are about money. I truly believe the Minister of Health wants to do what is best for the patients of Ontario. I don't believe she's qualified to know what is best without utilizing her most valuable resource, the province's physicians.
Yeah, and I think in that piece he talks about the training that goes into doing this minimally invasive surgery.
That's right, yeah. That
actually takes a bit longer to do than conventional surgery, but is better for the patient, and they're cutting on that as well.
Okay. So that goes on.
And on right? and on.
Yeah, and we'll see what... where this goes from here. Let's go to Denise. Denise?
Hello.
Hi, Denise. Hi. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, my husband just came back from the eye doctor today, and the doctor told him that his cornea is breaking down.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly does that mean?
Well, the cornea is the clear part of the eye in the middle of the eye, so it covers the pupils. It's where that little round black dot is, and then it's the coating on the top of it. Corneas... by breaking down, I'm not sure what is causing the breakdown, whether there's been some infection or some damage to the cornea. Corneas tend to be, in terms of repairing corneas, if a cornea is really damaged. It's like the window. It's like the window in your home. It has to stay clear for you to be able to look outside. And if a cornea is breaking down, it gets cloudy, and it's like looking through a dirty window. So you can't repair the cornea per se. There's nothing you can do to sort of clear the fogginess that's in it. And a lot of times if people have damaged corneas, they have to get what's known as corneal transplants, where they replace the cornea with another one. And those tend to work very well. But the issue becomes, again, with a cornea just breaking down, it's not enough information to know exactly what the cause is. I don't know if your husband was given any more information than that or told whether the cornea is going to repair itself. Because normally if there's some damage to the cornea from trauma, something went in the eye, something damaged the cornea and scratched it, I mean, they can repair themselves a bit and they tend to get better over time. But knowing that the cornea is breaking down, it's still very difficult to know exactly what they're referring to in terms of the disease process.
Okay. Well, he's now sent him to another specialist.
Okay.
So I guess they're
trying to figure out the diagnosis of what's doing it. Certain medications can cause corneal damage. For example, people that are on or actually cause eye damage, more cataract damage, taking, for example, steroids for a long time can do that. But corneas, that's something I'm just not familiar with what all the possibilities would be to cause corneal breakdown.
Okay.
Good luck, Denise.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for your phone calls. We're back after the news with Dr. Barry Dworkin on 580 CFRA and the Wednesday House Call.
Am I sick?
Yeah, but that's not what we're here. We're here to do a test. Come on.
What kind of test?
Just a test to find out if you're my son or not.
Why am I sitting on paper?
Because it's sanitary for the other patients. Now sit still so I can do the finger prick.
Finger prick? It's cold.
Yeah, just please sit still, please.
Okay, can I listen to your necklace?
No, you can't. Can you just sit still?
Why is there a skeleton?
I don't know. Walter, could you please?
Like a pirate,
can you please have him sit
does
still
he have
so
a name?
I can do this?
No, he hasn't got a name. I'm sorry, Ben. I'm sorry.
Would you please sit still? Please.
He got mad at me.
Yes, he did.
You shouldn't be recording me when I'm in your office like that. Dr. Barry Dworkin is here. It's a Wednesday House Call, 521-TALK. So I was out during the news break, and I was going through some of the faxes that are on the machine. I just happened to come across this from Hawthorne Elementary School, 2158 Saint Laurent Boulevard. I mean, my goodness, we got to call in the hazmat team here.
All right.
It has come to my attention that we have a second suspected case of Fifth disease in our school. This is a letter to the parents. Fifth disease is also called slapped cheek disease.
Right.
We used to call that in my house angry mother disease. But,
okay, Rob.
Fifth disease is a viral illness caused by parvovirus B19. Mm-hmm. Usually affects children, but can affect people of all ages. The virus does not cause serious illness in most people. 50% of adults believed to have had the virus and are now protected against this infection. Mild flu-like symptoms. General telltale of fifth disease is a very red rash, which begins on the cheeks, giving the person a slapped cheek appearance. Is there anything to worry about?
It's quite a common disease. It's called fifth disease because it was the fifth rash in children that was documented in terms of medical literature.
Okay.
And so that's why they call it fifth disease. For the most part, it's a benign condition, especially for children. For pregnant women, I mean, the general consensus is just to try to avoid contracting the infection, although about 40 to 60% of adults, and especially for pregnant women, are already immune to the disease. Hmm. And in terms of causing harm to the fetus, it really depends on the infection rate. That is how many children are getting infected in the school. If this is just two children in the entire school, the infection rate is quite low.
Uh-huh.
And when you look at the statistics for various infection rates, if you take the low end of data that we have, because infection rates can vary anywhere from 6% to 50%, 50% in households, 20% more in more institutions, 6% can be in schools. So if it has a 6% infection rate, for example, the risk of having harm to the fetus is about, for every 10,000 pregnancies, 6 could potentially be harmed, between 6 and 15. If it's a 20% infection rate, it's 2 to 5 per 1,000. So it's still extremely low. So the point is that although there's an advisory, it's common precautions. It's unlikely. I have yet to see a fetal death from fifth disease in my practice, and I have a lot of kids in school who have had fifth disease. So it's not something that really, other than taking general precautions, warrants any further action.
All right. Let's go to Dale on the cell phone. Dale.
Yes.
Go ahead, sir.
Yes.
What's your question for Dr. Dworkin, Dale?
Well, back in September, my tongue and throat swelled up very badly. My tongue split. I was in some pain. My doctor sent me to an allergist, but it took 6 months to get to the allergist. In the meantime, like thinking it was an allergy, I went gluten-free, dairy-free, took Reactins, Mandrill, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing worked. When I got to the allergist in January, he tested for allergies. I wasn't overly allergic to anything. And he continued to detox my liver and kidney. So I've lost like 30 pounds. In the meantime, my body's covered in bruises.
So
eyes are bruised. I look like I'm beat up all the time.
So are you saying the allergist?
Okay, hold on a second. He's got his radio on. Yeah.
So are you saying the allergist had put you through a liver and kidney detox? Is that what you're saying?
Just hold on. We got to get his. Hopefully, he's turned his radio down. Dale, did you
turn the radio down?
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
So you're saying who prescribed the detox for liver and kidney?
The allergist.
What allergist did you see?
Dr. Ross Mickelson.
That is someone that's called themselves an environmental allergist.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, frankly, go see an allergist. Hold on. I'm being serious here. Liver and kidney detoxes for a swollen tongue and swollen throat, and you're getting bruises on your body that can't be explained. There's something serious that's going on, and you need to be evaluated for connective tissue diseases, things that can be attacking your tissues. This is not something that detoxes do anything for. And the allergy testing that's done needs to be done appropriately. So I don't know what it is that you were recommended, but frankly, with what you're describing, swollen tongue, throat, bruising on your body, there's something serious going on, and I would see an allergist and also see a rheumatologist. There are blood tests that can be done to evaluate this condition.
I actually want to go to the hospital.
If he's having those kind of problems. Yeah. But, you know, detoxing, there's no such thing as detox.
Yeah, you and I have talked about this I don't know how many times. Your body naturally detoxifies itself, right?
This is just a nice term that's used in order to sell products to people.
Yeah.
There's no such thing. Your kidneys function perfectly well without you trying to help them out, and they do what they're supposed to do to filter out byproducts of your body's metabolism. So too your liver. Your liver does very well on its own. It regenerates on its own. There's nothing you can do to make the liver function better. It just functions. So taking things to say that you're detoxifying has no basis in scientific validity to it.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, we're going to get the email about that.
Oh, I'm sure we will.
Marie. Hello, Marie.
Hi, Dr. Dworkin.
Hi.
I have a question, please.
Yes.
I have a 12-year-old daughter who was diagnosed with juvenile bunions. And all the research that I've done on it indicates that it's hereditary, yet I don't have it. So what can you tell me more about this? Because I'm told that we have to wait until she's 15, until such time that she's done her growth spurt, to do any kind of corrective surgery on that.
That's correct, because if you do any significant surgery on the feet, you may actually damage the growth of the foot. And as a result, the child may end up with problems with gait and such. And so the thing to consider about inheriting is that it doesn't necessarily have to be directly from the parent, because the parent can be harboring the gene from their parents. Mm. And so when you're talking about
this is just like a bunion that you would see on an adult.
It's just happening on the child's foot. And because there's still lots of cartilage and there still has to be ossification, which means that the bone has to develop. You don't want to start altering the anatomy of the foot to such, because it's not a small surgery to deal with the bunions. And you may be removing growth plates. You may be removing parts of the bone that will then not grow, and you end up with deformities of the feet. So that's why they say wait till 15, because by that time, the foot has reached its pretty much its maximum size. So yes, it is frustrating because the child may have problems with the feet until then, and it can be a long time. But the issue is that you don't want to cause even more of a, trying to fix it now causes more of a problem than letting things happen, letting the foot develop, and then fixing it, which becomes a permanent solution, and then having a normal foot thereafter.
Okay. Brigitte.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Dr. Dworkin. I did cataract surgery in August.
Mm-hmm.
And after I got yeast infection candida in that eye, and now I can't see, and my vision is getting worse. With other eye too, and doctor said we have to wait. Now 1 month I don't have antibiotics drops in my eye,
mm-hmm.
and the vision is not getting better. I don't know. It's can you give me some hope? I will get back my vision.
Well, I'm not entirely clear on what is happening with your eye. Candidal infections usually. You don't really see yeast infections in the eye itself. Usually you can see yeast infections on the eyelids for reasons that, again, you know, unless there's been something to stimulate the growth of yeast cells in that area, it's rare to see yeast infections in the eye. Usually antibiotic drops are used to treat bacteria, which is not yeast. It's a completely different type of creature as it will be. But I unfortunately cannot give you an answer as to what's happening with your eyes. I just don't have enough medical information to be able to provide that to you, other than that you have to follow what your ophthalmologist is mentioning. I mean, they wouldn't purposely allow the eye to deteriorate. There may be some other issues that they haven't explained to you, and that's where you would have to ask them the question about why it is that they're waiting so long.
That's it. That's our time. Thanks for taking all those calls. It was certainly a busy one today.
Yeah, it was good.
Good to see you.
Good to see you too.
Back on Sunday?
I will be back on Sunday.
Sunday's at 4 with the Sunday House Call and Health Headlines. 10 minutes to 7 during Madeley in the Morning here on CFRA with Dr. Dworkin.